Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the episode of the Calicom Blogcast. My name is Matthew. We're back after a week off. Allow Ryan to go see Joji, which you heard at the top of the pod. On this week's episode, we're going to keep it a little bit light, a little bit short, I hope. We'll talk about the quote-unquote slim PS5. We'll also talk about the Unity CEO. We'll look into what's going on at OhioCon, and then finally we'll have some good news, because talking about a labor-stricken anime con is really bad. So we'll have something at the end. But to talk about all this, I have Nate.
You said a slim PS5? I just bought a PS5 like a couple months ago. What the hell?
Jericho?
Nate, you can call it the thick model. If you
want to. Yes, I got the very big edition.
Yeah.
And finally, Ryan.
Coming out of the Pandemonium tour last week, I gotta say, like the song that's gonna be playing at the end of the podcast, I'm a pretty boyfriend on the west side.
Speaking of the west side, we'll start off this podcast by talking about the new PS5 Slim, because it's I don't know how I got into that.
how did West Coast come into a PS5? Like, oh, a new version of the PS5 is coming out. Oh, right.
I don't know why. So Sony officially announced this about a couple of days ago, and while they're calling it a new PS5 model, it does look a little bit smaller. It's not considered a slim model, because if you look at the SKU, it's just called the PS5. So what's going to happen now is there's a regular PS5 with a disc drive that's going to be $499. And the digital edition is now being bumped up to $449. Now, you might be asking yourself, why did we go up from $399 with the original digital edition of the PS5 to $449? Well, there's a couple of things. Number one is, this now comes with an exact 1 terabyte drive instead of the 825 gigabyte drive that you would find on existing PS5s. There's also additional USB plugs. But more importantly, there is now an attachment that you could put on the side of the PS5 where if you wanted to upgrade to an actual PS5 with a disk drive, you can buy a separate Ultra HD Blu-ray drive for $80.
I thought it was okay. 50. Did it go up recently?
According to this Verge article, it's $80. Yeah. I know what you're thinking.
So on top of everyone grieving, or everyone wanting a slim model, despite that, everyone is grieving their condolences to the digital console, because of the fact that if you really, really want to feel like you've missed out this past generation, or at least the last 3 years, about a disc drive, you can actually buy an optional optical drive so you can actually play your disc game, PS4 and PS5 games, at a price that's supposed to be more competitive to the 1 terabyte 1S, or Series S, I should say. How is that really competitive when you're raising the prices to be $450 to meet the 1 terabyte Series S, but you're still going to offer the optical drive at $80? And not to mention also all in the material, that vertical stand that you see that it's sitting on, it doesn't come with the system like the old ones do. You got to pay an extra $30 for that.
Wait. So you don't have this, you will not have the stand at all. It's just what?
It comes with no vertical stand, period. That is an extra $30.
That's a bunch of bull. Holy crap.
Oh, wow.
wait, hold on. Says a horizontal stand will be included with this new PS5 model, and a new vertical stand that works all PS files will be sold separately for $30. So if you want to put it on the side, you can buy a vertical stand for $30.
Then again, like the stand that we have only goes vertical or both?
Both ways.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, it goes both ways, so we can be okay with whatever the stand we have.
Yeah,
and if that stand still works over at the new PS5, then
it's not. It's only compatible with ours.
Oh, jeez.
Because you have to remember the dimensions are different, as I was about to say.
Yeah, because they're slimmer.
You are looking at about a 30-40% reduction on size for the same performance, and also having to pay now. Feeling bad for the digital owners who actually want to opt into the said vertical stand, said optical drive, and get fucked over an extra, what, $110 that you're overpaying, that you could just buy a normal PS, like physical PS5 version of it.
Yeah.
And here's the sad part about it too. This is going to be the norm, because I've also read on a couple articles that once the inventory for the standard PS5s run out, that's it. They're converting straight to slims. That's all you're going to be able to buy on the market.
I mean, that's the new thing that they always do, because like, if you want to get that fat, you know, PS5, then it's going to be again back on the eBay marketplace, where it's going to go up like in high end price. Like they've done it before. We had the big chunky PS3. They had the big chunky PS3, then they slimmed it down, and that has been
Hold your horses. So, where that came into effect, you have to remember that the fat PS3s had backwards compatibility for PS1, PS2, and could play PS3 games. However, the way that you look at it is, PS4 is going to have backward, PS5 has backwards compatibility for the 4, but that's it. And even the standard slims are still doing that. When they went to the slim model for the PS3, they dropped backwards compatibility like a bad habit.
And mean PS, you mean PS4, for the PS4, right? Because I know that PS4
for PS3, after the fat models, they dropped.
Oh, yeah, they did. Yeah, I remember that. And everybody wanted to get the fat PS3s just for the backwards compatibility, so they can play PS2,
that's why PS1. That's why the back and pat fats are much more like in demand and more higher priced in comparison to the fat PS5s when those go off the market.
Yeah,
they're not going to be worth much, because the slims are going to be able to play backwards compatibility with the 4, unless, for any particular reason, which I have not heard of, they drop back and pat for PS4 games, which would be a crying fucking shame.
That will not. I just hope that's the case. Just the fact that, like, you know, we have everybody plays still the PS4 games, and you know, they're still at least they could be able to play on the PS5, which is great. And a lot of people.
Well, that was their big saving grace for the PS5 when they first announced it, and
they said they're going to have it on the Slim. So if anything, that's good news. Let's keep it that way.
Let's hope it stays that way, precisely. But what I was getting is, the PS3 fats are only in demand and at a higher price because of the chip that allows you to play PS1 and PS2 games. That is it. Mm-hmm. After that, there was no backwards compatibility until now. Mm-hmm. And let's hope it stays that way, or maybe gets upgraded to where we're not paying now $80 to like almost $220 for backwards compatibility via a streaming or downloading old games. So let's see what happens.
It does look I just feel like it's the standard for PlayStation. I mean, you've done that before with the PS3, PS4, and PS5. PS3 and PS4. Now the PS5 is doing the same thing. So again, I have to say this, when I first heard the news, it's not as big of a surprise that I heard about this. But of course, when it comes to like what is going to be different with the Slim, it does make me concerned the fact that you can like buy a digital drive for $80 more, and all this kind of stuff. But
you mean a disk drive?
The disk drive, yeah. Sorry,
said additional drive.
An additional disk drive. Let's just put it like that. well, if they add that on, then obviously it's gonna be more to pay for the digital edition than the regular PS5 Slim. But no matter what, I mean, as long as it still works like what the PS5 has done before, then it'll still be a hit. Like, everyone's still probably going to grab it.
I mean, for those wanting smaller things in their entertainment center or just all over around, like, it makes sense.
I'm not going to lie. Like, my PS5 is currently like in my computer area, to say, because I don't have much on my entertainment center.
Just to say the least, like, I feel bad for digital owners that have to buy into this optical drive at that price. If it was like, just gonna buy a digital, and I'm still wondering if this optical drive is gonna be compatible with the older PS5s or the older PS5 digital consoles.
I don't think
isn't compatible with the new drive isn't compatible with the older console.
No, because it's because if you look at the model, it's literally built. They built it in. That's why they can call it a slim. They literally took it out and made it smaller. And then it said, "Oh, hey, if you want a little bulge to come out for a drive, you could."
That is so dumb. That means it's not making it incompatible for the older. The older digital is a terrible choice.
Well, I think if anything, that's just a pure digital only PS5. But that's how they want to sell it. I mean, we'll see how everyone reacts when we get to November, because it is going to be on sale at select US retailers and through PlayStation's own website. So we'll find out what the reception is, especially when all the tech tubers get their hands on the Slim PS5, they get their hands on this new drive, and we figure out, is this any better than the old PS5.
One minor concern I have as well is, like, given the fact that there were overheating issues with the original, like, launch models, given how much thinner we're going, how is the airflow going to look on it when we, like, compared to pushing out all the two big fans and then pushing it out through the back, are we actually going to see better airflow, or are we going to be more, I feel like we're going to be more restricting airflow and causing more overheating issues than we have with the original launch models.
They probably won't be releasing any kind of, any kind of specs or tests like that until, like, reviewers actually get their hands on it.
No, I get that. I'm just concerned for airflow, or at least just for cooling in general, because of how much we're thinning out. I mean, sure, the motherboard and all the drives inside, all the internals have been slimmed down after many revisions since the launch model to help with...
I'm looking right now on the spec sheets. I don't see anything about intake or outtake fans. So we're going to, again, once all the tech tubers get their hands on these, they're going to rip that fucker apart, and we'll find out if the cooling is better or worse for the new Slim PS5.
Mm, good to know.
So for the next topic, we're going to stay in gaming, and we're going to follow up on a story that we had talked about previously, and it was about Unity and how they were having this new pricing plan, and they want to make more money, and guess who's running it? It's the dude from EA. So I think one of the things we're asking ourselves, who's going to take the fall for this? And it finds out that John Riccitiello, the CEO of Unity, is going to fall on the sword. He is going to be out as the CEO effective immediately, and he will stay as a Unity employee to 2024. Now, he's not necessarily out. They're calling it a retirement. So...
That's quite questionable. Just the fact that, it's quite questionable the fact that, like, he is the CEO and he was making all these decisions for Unity Games, and of course everybody hated it that there was backlash for it. That the way that he got out was more towards, stepping down and retiring. I mean, I find that questionable, to be fair. But at the same time,
questionable is, like, not even the answer at this point. I mean, the fact that he's cashing out still, even after selling the majority of his stocks and still holding quote unquote 15 to about 25% of his stocks after leaving the company and still getting a big severance payout, like, it's fucking bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, given everything negative he's done in the last month and a half. The fact that he's getting away, like, kind of scot-free without taking any consequences is bullshit.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, and I don't think this is a good move for him, considering that he's, you know, stepping down while there's a lot of fire going on in Unity.
Well, in this Verge article, they quote Brendan Sheffield, the director of Necrosoft Games, who penned one of the first screeds condemning Unity's initial price changes. Is it good that Riccitiello is leaving? Yes, he quotes. Then he says, but do I trust that Unity will never do another rug pull all pricing? No. And that's how I feel. It's just like, just because you got rid of John Riccitiello doesn't necessarily mean the template has been put in. Because if you look at what's happened, they got what they wanted. They're getting a 2.5% revenue share. So it wasn't like we went back to a zero model. They actually got what they wanted. Now, it's not what they initially wanted with the higher percentages and whatnot. But still, it's like, okay, this is how it's going to be now. And yeah, Mr. Riccitiello, you're the one who got blamed the most, so you're out. But we still got what we wanted. So it still doesn't still look good for Unity. I mean, I wish they would just go back to a zero model, but, you know, I don't know the inner workings of Unity and what's been going on out there. But it's a bad look overall.
No, it's a bad look overall for Unity for sure. And, you know, just the fact that they continue to have backlash for the questionable moves that Unity has been doing, you know, eventually they got to do something to at least make sure that they can get their players back.
I mean, forget it. Just let them have their scapegoat and go get away with it. Fucking, like...
Well, if they got to do that, they're going to fall down in place, too. So the business might fall because of this.
It's only a matter of time before the bricks fall down or all the Tetris, Chetorino stack in place. But the way you look at it, they got their scapegoat. Now they're going to bank off of it.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of CEOs, another one that's in the headlines is Activision Blizzard CEO Bobby Kotick. And this is on the heels that the Microsoft acquisition of Activision Blizzard has been complete for $68.7 billion or $69 billion. Giggity. Essentially, what's going to happen is that Bobby Kotick will stay on as the CEO until the beginning of next year. Then he's going to step down. So you got to remember, he's been there since 2008. So he's been there for a long ass freaking time. And you got to remember his track record, you know, discrimination lawsuits, unprecedented organization activity, union busting, labor practice complaints, walk-offs.
But he's still working out of the company, which would make it a bad look again for
Activision. But he's going to be gone in about 2 months anyway.
Okay. Well, if anything, it'll be a good recovery for Activision Blizzard, knowing the fact that they have now been acquired by Microsoft. So who knows how the games will be.
Oh, I'm just hoping that Microsoft cleans house, in all honesty, and, you know, takes care of that company culture because...
Oh shit! Yeah,
hopefully come to it. Wouldn't touch that with a.
I mean, after all the news that happened for Blizzard and Activision, but all the news that has been going on with what's been happening with Activision Blizzard, they really do need to clean house, and it took them like this long to finally do that. Hopefully Microsoft can put like the authoritative hand here and say like, hey, we need to do something to make sure that the look of Activision Blizzard will not reflect on what happened years ago.
So 8,500 Activision employees will be joining Microsoft. So I have to think they're going to keep the best of the best. And Bobby Boy's going to be this for a little bit longer. If anything, I'm interested to see. Because, like, yes, they own the rights to Call of Duty. They own the rights to Diablo. But I'm more interested of like the fact that now they own King, and King is known for one game, really, and it's called Candy Crush.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to look at it from this perspective too. They own a lot of Activision properties, so that we're looking at like Spyro, Crash Bandicoot. We're looking at the likes.
Guitar Hero. Look at Guitar Hero. They are everything.
Yeah, Guitar Hero wants back. He mentioned that he wants to bring it back, even though
Is that Candy Crush makes more money than all of those people.
It is still one of the, like the best selling not best selling, but most downloaded games that is currently on every like mobile device right now,
because all the old grandmas and young kids are playing the game.
They keep on playing it like while they're bored, they're just literally playing Candy Crush literally while chilling or we're just waiting for something, you know.
Yeah, in the fact that like the way that the game is manipulated, quote unquote, it's like, oh, you didn't get this many moves. You want to buy another life for 99 cents? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I just remember before I used to do that. Also, it's like, oh crap, I ran out of ran out of turns. Then you have to like buy hearts again in order for you to play. Here's the thing, like they at least they're kind of like been more friendly where they like give you unlimited hearts for a certain amount of time so you can play like that long until you that timer runs out and then you only have 5 hearts left, you know.
It's manipulative though.
It is manipulative, yeah. And there's so many levels now, so good luck.
Quick little lightning round. Another CEO that is stepping down is current CEO and of operations at Sony, Jim Ryan's actually stepping down as well, and that's kind of a good sign for PlayStation owners. A lot of people have been up in uproar and a lot of joy that the fact that he has actually stepped down because he's done a lot of bad than good for Sony and PlayStation. Now we're going to actually have another Japanese CEO in place of Jim Ryan. Don't really want to go too much into detail because we have a lot on the to go through, but just a little lightning round for you guys.
Speaking of labor disputes, because we talked about a little bit when it came to Activision and the fact that, yeah, there were planned walkouts under Bobby Kotick's tenure. I got this news earlier last week when this shit blew up out of Ohio. Before we get started, I do want to say that the thoughts and opinions about this particular topic is ours and ours alone, and do not represent the California Competitive Blog as a whole, and do not represent what the following organizations or other entities are trying to implement. Now, before this got posted at all, do any of you know what OhioCon is?
No, I didn't know.
Up until this point, you have never heard of OhioCon.
I know it was Ohio's like premier anime convention back when, considering the fact that the state of Ohio didn't have a proper anime convention.
Okay.
To be fair, in my case, I didn't know about it, so.
Okay. Well, is it like you and I, Ryan, back when it was like anime, when we were first learning about cons and we look up the cons that were happening, you would have your anime expos, your ASENs, your A-Con, your Otakon, SakuraCon, and then you see this con in like the beginning of January called OhioCon. Is that where you kind of spot it at?
Yeah, I mean, given the fact that our history of looking up different conventions in different cities, different states, things that were of interest during our younger like con vetting years, but despite the fact, it's definitely like from when we were doing research into other conventions that we were interested in, that I still remember Ohio not really having a proper convention until OhioCon came around.
Yeah. So according to AnimeCons.com, OhioCon started in 2001. It has been going ever since. And if you're paying attention to the convention scene, as of right now, OhioCon workers are on strike. And I'm like, what? You guys could go on strike? What? Are you serious? So there was a huge info dump on social media. You may or may not seen it depending on who you're friends with. Did you guys see it? Because I know we all have the same friends.
I remember I saw it. I remember how a lot of people, like a lot of my friends, posting about it, and then they pretty much like put comments out saying like, this is not how you run a con, and you know, those kind of comments. I really didn't get the full details about like what was being talked about. It was more like along the lines of like, well, this is not fanime, this is not how conventions were run before, but it's good to hear about this whole drama. Let's get to know about this whole drama thing that's going on at OhioCon.
Yeah. So really there's kind of like three bodies you have to look at. There is the OhioCon senior leadership, there's the Cultural Exchange Society Incorporated, CESI, and then there's an organization called COVID. Now COVID represents the volunteers who work at various Ohio conventions. And I'm not sure whether or not I want to find out more information, but just on the surface, it looks like they work at most, they work at all the anime conventions. So they're the ones who, and it's kind of cool that there's an organization out there dedicated, because like, let's say, for example, you're not treated well at a convention and you want to talk to somebody, well, you have this organization to go to and say, hey, I experienced this, what can you do? It's kind of like having a union rep, but having a union rep. And we'll talk about union busting in a little bit, because there was some rumor mongering that they were trying to unionize. And first off, you can't unionize at all, because they're basically a nonprofit. Let's get that out of the way. So when I first saw the COVID manifesto, I looked at the date. And the date, it's dated February 26th of 2023. And then went to AnimeCon, so like, wait a minute, doesn't OhioCon happen in the first like quarter of 2023? And you are correct. Last year's OhioCon was January 19th to the 22nd. So I'm like, ooh. So you've had these issues for almost
a year.
And Here's my thing. If there's another, there was another info dump called the Code Manifesto Evidence, and it's a big ass Google Drive with all of these chat logs and PDFs, and there's one marked complaints as stated by COVID going back to October of 2022. Mm. So I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
So let me get this straight. They are just keeping the records of things that happened back in the previous OhioCon.
Yeah. Also within this Google Drive, there's a document called COVID Special Meeting Minutes, and it's dated January 20th, 2023. So OhioCon 2023 had just wrapped about a week before this came out. And I'm looking at this here, and it's like, wow, like, I'll just point at some of these notes here. It's like, volunteering for a for-profit organization, i.e. employment violation practices. Who is our HR individual to address these concerns?
Mm.
Addressing structure of nonprofit and that there is no clarification on whether we are not, in addition to our intentions going forward. Roughly, what is OhioCon paid expenses for 25-hour staffer? So it looks like 25 an hour. Considering one-fourth of the cost of the hotel, food, et cetera, potentially another violation of employment practices if staff benefits do not match the minimum wage. So there is a lot to unpack. If you look at this particular doc, because this is all public.
Yeah, I was wondering, because like they also did put up a lot of posts, like, for example, this I saw this on Facebook about this whole OhioCon was founded in 2001 and this whole big letter that talks about OhioCon 2024 and something about like their logos, for example, like thinking stealing and stuff like that.
Okay, so
I'm trying to get all the details.
Are you talking about the statement that the convention made?
Yes, that one that was, oh, that came out 12 hours ago. Oh, that was recently.
Well, the OhioCon statement came out October 6th.
Okay, so yeah, that was the one I was
talking about a week ago. So we started hearing about this strike like later on, like I'd say about maybe the 9th, 10th, or maybe a little bit earlier. It might have been a little bit earlier. Actually, no, it was earlier because we were still talking about it last week, but Ryan was over at Joji. So we actually been letting this cook a little. Because at the time, right, it was like, okay, all this shit's happening, and then like everyone went on strike. I do want to address the small elephant in the room, and that's the logo. So give me 1 second. I want to quote this directly. So part of me was like, why the fuck are they caring so much about a logo? And it's so weird because I'm like, wait, why'd y'all change the logo? I've known that logo for almost the entire time that I've known the existence of OhioCon, which is a cross with that was red and had white lettering, or recently was changed to a blue. And I actually asked COVID about this, and they got back to me. They say that the red cross that OhioCon has used since the early 2000s, as well as the blue cross that was recently used, were in violation of copyright held by the American Red Cross and Blue Cross Blue Shield, respectively. Then I find out that the logo that they want to use, which is the Sakura, is eerily similar to another company. So it was like, okay, for now, let's just go back and let's just use what the logo that we've known so far, which is the which is the cross. And for Coven, this is kind of like the small elephant in the room, because it's like, okay, we can negotiate with you on whether or not to change the logo. What they basically feel like, and this is in their manifesto, is they feel mistreated.
Right.
What I did was I fed the manifesto and a bunch of other information to ChatGPT. It could decipher what they're saying into something that I can understand. And, you know, the first two things, you know, the introduction, it goes, the manifesto begins by expressing dissatisfaction with the treatment of the workers and staff by the owners and board officers of Ohio College CSI. There's a call for you to stand against further mistreatment. Grievances. The CEI board president has damaged community relationships. The board president has favored friends and family for board positions, sidelining staff reputation, a lack of transparency in board discussions, financial matters, a mission statement that is perceived as insincere or not in line with the terms of the organization, or organizational structure that has been disregarded, creative control that is aligned with the personal interests of a close friend of the board president, which I believe is something that got brought up. I want to say it was in the complaint state by COVID. I want to say Studio Capsule, because one of the things that they brought up is mascot/art/merchandise direction taken away from an outside vendor, Studio Capsule, and brought to an in-house to a capable marketing team. So what they're saying is this outside organization is being run by a close friend. So basically, it's kind of like a friends with benefits type of thing, where it's like, hey, you're my best friend. Why don't you get this lucrative contract with me, huh?
That's not good.
Workers are undervalued with their contributions outside of specific auditing hours not recognized. Compensation issues where workers are only compensated for expenses and there's inconsistency what counts as expense. And then the process for seeking funds for small expenses is bureaucratic. There's this whole thing about CESI going to a 501(c)(3), which they feel like might be a way to quote unquote, you know, like shelter themselves with taxes, which it kind of makes sense. I mean, if you can move to a 501(c) and call yourself a charity, you can kind of avoid taxes. So you put, in theory, put more money back into the convention. And also you get opportunities that you would not necessarily get if you're a for-profit company. And so this document, the manifesto, is deep. It has universal rights to the convention workers, immediate demands. They talk about board representation, code of conduct, resignation of specific people. They have names called out. Financial transparency, budgeting, like, you know, shit that you actually need to do at a convention.
Yeah.
Stuff that you need to have ironed out.
Yeah, all the things that need to be, like, set in place before even running a con. Yeah. Like, in order to have all the rules established so that everybody who volunteers or works there at a convention are treated respectably.
And then within this document, there is also a kind of like, sorry, within this document, this is still the manifesto, there is a rebuttal from the CEI board of directors to the grievances, and they go through all of it. And that's a whole set of freaking worms. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put this doc in our show notes so you can kind of see what I'm seeing. And as I said, the opinions heard on this podcast by myself is my own thoughts alone. Do not represent the California Convention Block as a whole. Do not represent what COVID, CSI, or Ohio Con actually want. This is my own analyst. If I miss something, please let me know. We have contacts. You can go to our Linktree page, and you can contact me and let me know what I got wrong, or even what ChatGPT got wrong. Because I'm trying to analyze it in such a way because you gotta remember, manifestos like have a lot of words. You know, I don't know if you saw the document. It's like what, 31 pages long? Shit, no, our document is 31 pages. How long is the manifesto? The manifesto is a lot of pages.
Oh jeez.
it's a lot of pages. It's 25 pages.
Okay, so it's not as more than ours.
Yeah, but ours has some analysts. Sorry, Ars also has some analysis of stuff that's been posted on social media, you know, various documents from the COVID manifesto evidence. There's been some screen caps from Facebook, screen caps from Discord, kind of talking about this strike. Because as you'll see here, we it goes through all the analysts, and then it goes through the fact that at some point, Melissa Phelps initiated a hostile takeover by firing and removing access for majority of senior leadership, the team of OhioCon. And I'm like, wait, what? And then there was a post from the official HelloCon group that talks about it. It's like, I didn't fire anybody. I had to dissolve some positions because us moved to a 501. These positions were no longer needed. Yeah, just as serious, like, yeah. So clarification, Melissa emphasizes that the leaders of HelloCon were not fired. Instead, this board said to remove the convention chairman from their position, presumably because they were not providing necessarily information to the. And Anna says she apologizes. So it's kind of like, I bring up like, okay, how did these two Facebook posts, you know, compare to the manifesto? Then it brings, and as an analyst of that, then we go to some other documents. We kind of already talked about the complaint state by COVID, the meeting notes from January right after 2023. There's also a doc called All You Really Need to Know. I found it very interesting just because of like why is this on the front page of the Google Drive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh my fucking God. Yeah. And then you also may have heard that Melissa tried to do a Q&A. It seems like it went off the rails, which is definitely not helping anybody's cause, really.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. So that's what also what people were posting to as well on social media. It was like, yeah, over on the IOCON Facebook page, there's someone trying to do a Q&A, and then it's like their own personal venting session, and then they just delete it. So I'm like, the fuck?
Okay,
yeah, so there... So,
deleted the Q&A?
Yeah, so supposedly the Q&A was deleted.
Wow.
That's what it's trying to like hide the tracks of what happened in that session. Well, this is actually quite suspicious of what OhioCon is doing or whatever the current heads are doing right now. I wouldn't say like this. It's just more like bad organization right now of what's happening over at OhioCon.
I won't say it's the organization of the staff. It's more like, I think it's more conduct of the management and, you know, the higher ups. You know, this, especially because, well, with the date of the document and when it was submitted, like, they've had a lot of time to address this. The ball has been in their court for quite some time, and we're getting close to the end of the year. OhioCon is just around the corner.
Yeah,
I was gonna say that next year's OhioCon is supposed to happen January 18th to the 21st of 2024. Now, for reference, SAC Anime and I believe ALA are on the same weekend or not the same weekend. SAC Anime winner is 5th through the 7th, and I believe ALA is 12th through the 14th.
Wait, ALA?
Yeah, or is it also 5th through the 7th?
4th through
7th,
I think.
Yeah, because it's now a 4-day con.
Oh, it's a 4-day con, yeah, not a 3-day con. Yep. That's true. ALA is January 4th. January 4th
through 7th. I actually brought this up with ChatGPT is, let's say, for example, this gets dealt with by the end of the month, could you actually hold a convention in 2024? This is what ChatGPT. Remember, this is ChatGPT. This is their analysis, and you know, I kind of agree with it. Considering these factors, while it'd be a tough decision, it would be wise to cancel the 2024 convention and focus on rebuilding for 2025. This would give a team ample time to address underlying issues, reorganize, and plan a successful convention that attendees will appreciate and enjoy. Yeah, that's pretty hard because, you know, there's a little thing called the contract with the hotel and all your vendors.
Yeah, so that's the other thing. If you actually cancel it right now, and plus the thing is, like,
the convention is about to start in like a couple of months. So if you, and then all these things are already planned up and set up. So canceling a convention, it's more towards like, well, you got to return a lot of assets back to the people, you know? Like, it's more towards like refunding everybody who is going to OhioCon, plus the vendors, plus like the hotel and everything. It's, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, so I tried to figure out this triangle relationship. That's what I called it. So the relationship between the CESI. So ChatGPT, according to it, ChatGPT thinks that CEI is overreaching nonprofit entity established to oversee OhioCon, aiming to make OhioCon a year-round initiative to ensure sustainability. The OhioCon senior leadership team is a group responsible for the direct management and operational aspects of OhioCon. So they're the ones who like run the day-to-day operations, kind of like what Nate and I do. And then COVID represents the Association of OhioCon Volunteers. While these volunteers are the backbone of the convention, they act as a collective voice for these conventions. So for these volunteers. And again, the angle is that COVID is not necessarily a... They act like a union, but they're not really a union because they can't...
But here's the thing, like, with the mistreatments that they're having, I'm reading at this ChatGPT document that you put out, and it said they're going on strike, and I'm like, they're not really going on strike. They're just more towards, like, unionizing to not work, to get a fair deal or a fair treatment. Yeah,
but you can't call it union.
You can't call it union. It's more towards like a team.
It's all solidarity. Like, we stand in solidarity that you should not be working this convention because we're badly mistreated. We're underpaid. You know, there's no. Who do we go to actually, if we have issues?
I was gonna say, like, as volunteers, their payment is what exactly?
Well, that's the thing. It's a lot of times it's. You get food vouchers, you get hotel vouchers, parking vouchers. Depending on where you are, you may or may not get an actual cash payout at the end. What happens? This is what they're talking about within the manifesto. Is it's so hard to even do like is getting funds for expenses? Like, let's say the day of, you need to go make a Target run because you need to buy more Sharpies for your guests. Or you need supplies. Well, what you usually would do is you go to Target, you buy your stuff, you get a receipt, you send it out to your lead or supervisor, say, hey, I need a reimbursement for it. And then, you know, they usually get that to you at the end of the convention. Well, what they're saying is it's bureaucratic. So it's a lot of hoops for you to even get that money back or even have the money in the first place. Because a lot of times, it's me going out and spending my own money, knowing that I'm going to get it back at some point.
Right.
So part of me is just like, what the hell exactly is going on at OhioCon? And it's like, I think the one part of the document that really catches my eye is universal rights to convention workers. It's workers should be fair and paid, should be paid fairly. They should have a right to working, safe working conditions. They should know the ownership. They should be represented in decision-making, code of conduct. It's like, should you have that shit in there regardless?
Right. That's concerning if it's not there.
Now, some of these may or may not, you should not, you know, should be more of a need-to-know basis. But for the most part, like, for example, like, number eight, investment transparency. Like, I don't need to know all the investment that SAC Anime is making, but it's the one that impacts me the most. I need to know about it. Or like, hey, we're going to increase the budget for so that we can have more ribbons. You know, something that you want to know, right? We're investing in new machines. We're investing in new stuff.
We're investing in new games, yes, and new things that can help out folks that want to get more ribbons and things like that. Yeah, I understand.
But for you, it's like, do you really care if they're investing in new technology to make registration better? Like, I mean, yeah, you kind of care, but it's something that you should kind of know. But it's like
it's more towards their department, though. If you're talking about like things to improve registration, it's more towards their department and the department heads to at least I'll correlate with something.
Yeah, I can rebut it just a little tad, because all your workers should, like, if you're starting out brand new at a convention, you should not know of any of this. You're there just to work and get your badge. Because at most, what you're doing is, I show up for 2 hours, and then I get a badge to go do one day of the con. That's the trade-off that I'm going to do. Should I really know of the investment that they made for gaming or for guest relations? No. But if I'm in that department, it makes an impact. For example, people who I know work within the video department of Sac Anime. If something was impacting them, they should have a right to know. So I don't need to know that all your workers need to know these investments. You know, I'm just looking at one of these examples. But for the most part, like, all of this other stuff is like, yeah, you should be paid. You should have it if something happens.
You should be paid by being compensated, like being compensated by like food vouchers or free parking.
Well, yeah, like I said, like, you know, there's different ways paid. of getting compensated. But what they're saying is it should be enough to where it's more than quote unquote minimum wage. That's what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it says here, you know, going back to hours, it says here, you know, if you look at the immediate demand section, it's like all work hours, including setup and breakdown. It's like, wait, you're not getting paid to set up and break down? What?
You're supposed to just because it's, you know, an extra hour or two just to clean out everything from what happened at the convention. That makes no sense. Technically there.
Yeah, so... you know, again, this is my own opinion. This shit's dumb as hell.
I mean, if anything, like, if the things are true, then the heads definitely need to treat their volunteers better. And just to make sure that this convention runs properly for 2024. Because I'm not expecting a possible cancellation, or else a lot of OhioCon fans are probably going to be in riot talking about, hey, where's my refund? And hey, what the hell did you cancel? I have like plans for cosplays. Yeah.
Well, they're kind of already thinking about that. And
that's not good.
Well, there was a Q&A. It was like, should I ask for a chargeback that says, you can try, but I can't guarantee anything. So people are kind of already thinking about that.
But it's like, okay, well, if you're willing to sacrifice a lot of money back, it's
your faith too. Yeah. You know, it's interesting though. Like, there are two things I want to comment about the situation. One is, like, you know, say the OhioCon staff are successful in unionizing, right? What does that mean for conventions going forward?
Here's the thing: they can't unionize.
No, it's more towards, like, I mean, me and Matt has been through this before, where we volunteer, we go to these conventions, we get a free badge, we do our job over there, and the thing is that they treat us well. Like, I don't hear anything about like the heads like being assholes or anything like that, or any of that situation. In my situation in ALA, I've been having a fun time. I know what duties I got to do. I always talk under a person that runs the whole department, and in the end, we run a good ALA. So I don't understand what about OhioCon's case in this situation, but what you're saying, Matt, is that, yeah, it's kind of ridiculous of the things that are going on here.
Yeah, I'm just looking through the OhioCon statement that was made by the convention. And, you know, a lot of it is like, no, there's no union busting. No, there wasn't a hostile takeover.
Yeah.
I talked about the logo. The logo resembles Sakura Color Products. So it's kind of like, oh, you go from the Red Cross to Blue Cross Blue Shield to Sakura Color Products.
We must ask that the interim Sakura Blossom logo might be not used moving forward. So I see. Does that mean like those who actually posted up the OhioCon, like they say, for example, like somebody posts up the logo and it's the OhioCon logo with the Sakura leaf on it. if I'm assuming that they're talking about just saying, hey, use a different logo instead, not that one.
Or go back to the old logo.
Or back to the old logo, yeah.
Yeah. So essentially, you know, ChatGPT says, from the statement, it's clear that the main concerns surrounding restructuring the future direction of OhioCon and ensure that the convention's legacy and community-driven focus remains intact. The challenge now lies in communication, rebuilding trust, and ensure that all parties feel value and heard. Because if you notice here, they don't mention COVID in this entire fucking statement. It mentions... Mm-hmm. Valued staff and phenomenal volunteers, that are now on strike.
They say CESI, and this Coven that they're talking about, it's more, I mean, like, it's a group of volunteers. And like what you said, Matt, volunteers are not unionized just because they don't get paid. I don't know, it's just weird. If anything, like, was it OhioCon is looking at these volunteers and they're like, volunteers, we're going to treat them well. Like, we're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that they're treated well. But union busting is more towards, like, I mean, like, we'll pay you via free badge, but it's not like you're running a company or anything.
Yeah, actually, I kind of like this that we're talking about at the pod, because everything's now pieced together. Like, I'm seeing Studio Capsule once again is like, for example, we're gonna do a refresh logo with Studio Capsule, but then Coven goes back and says, well, Studio Capsule, that's all being run by friends, and they're only working with them because they're friends, not necessarily an in-house team. Again, if I got that wrong, please let me know, or if it's incorrect at any point, let me know, or if it's propaganda, let me know, you know, whatever. The point, again, my opinions don't matter. They don't represent the blog as a whole, and don't represent any of the organizations and what they're trying to do.
I'm looking at the post on Facebook, and they are pretty much saying, like, support OhioCon volunteers. Like, they're putting a hashtag, I support Ohio, OhioCon volunteers. So, I mean, if anything, they are supporting them. I mean, looks like the whole crowd of OhioCon is supporting the volunteers. Yeah.
And honestly, I agree. I support the volunteers too as well. Get your fucking money. Get paid.
Get paid. Yeah. Get your compensation of what OhioCon is supposed to treat you, and make sure it's like treated fairly and all.
Yeah, treat it fairly. Get treated fairly. Like, look, for me, you know, for SAC Anime, like, if something happens where I'm wrongly done by somebody else, I know who to talk to. So, you know, I don't know if these people from OhioCon have that same, like, have that same line, which is, if something happens to me, who could I talk to? And that's where it's like, we want a representative. We want an HR representative. We want somebody from COVID represent me saying, yeah, I was wrong by this particular department, and it's something that's more widespread. Let's figure this out so that it doesn't occur again.
Yep.
So, yeah, this situation is a goddamn fucking mess.
And it's like what people are saying. It's like a dumpster fire. But we'll see how it goes. This is not a convention that we attend that much. Yet they said they're still going to continue on with 2024. So
I forgot who the initial poster, but they were like, you know, this should set a precedent moving forward. And I'm like, yeah, I actually kind of agree, because, you know, this is a test case of, if you mistreat your volunteers and, you know, in a way also mistreat, for example, like your lower staff, this shit can happen. Where if they feel undervalued and, you know, they're giving their time and effort to help your convention succeed, the best you can do is treat them well and pay them. We'll pay attention to this and see how this happens, because I don't think they have mentioned anything else since. No, they have not.
No, they have not. The only thing that I saw from their Facebook, for example, is that statement. So they have not really said much ever since. So if anything, like what you said, Matt, we're going to be probably watching on and continue on to see if OhioCon is still going to happen in January. But with all the things that have been popping up when it comes to the bad news, the bad treatment of volunteers, who knows if this kind of will continue going on, or if you know, the head of, or the people who are running OhioCon can actually do whatever they're saying and actually do treat them right.
Yeah. So it looks like, if anything, also too, I just clicked on the news section of OhioCon, and back on September 1st, they mentioned the new logo. And this is when kind of like this part of this ball starts to roll. And all of a sudden, now there's a rip between the cherry blossom logo and then the cross logo and then the other cross logo. And now this one that is being used on X, it's more of I don't know how to describe it. It's like a combination of blue and red. I don't know how you describe that, but yeah, it's... Last time I'm going to say this, the opinions are mine and mine alone. Do not represent the California Game Budget as a whole. Sorry. Do not represent the California Game Budget blog as a whole. And do not represent what...
Any of our views.
Any of our views. This shit's dumb as hell.
I know, that's what we're saying. That's what we're saying here. Like...
Fucking pay your people. Take care of them.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I know that you can't unionize just because volunteers can't unionize and stuff like that. But if anything, please, OhioCon, just do what they say. Treat them well. You know, compensate them fairly with free badges or free hotels or whatever they were at demanding. And yeah, make OhioCon a better place to go to for everybody.
If other conventions can do it, why not them?
So once again, I leave this podcast with bad news. So you know where we're going to, people, boys and girls.
And here's another segment with Matt and the rest of the crew. Go.
Tell me something good.
Tell me something good.
This got posted a couple of days ago. Crunchyroll has announced that Suzume's returning to theaters in US and Canada on October 27th. So that is going to be Friday. They announced that they're going to re-release the movie in 200 theaters across the two countries with both sub and dub. And you can find tickets, and there are no information yet.
Anything, they're bringing it back in theater, so that's cool.
Anything on IMAX yet?
You and I are on the same page, because they have not released their list of theaters yet.
Yeah,
but
yeah, they didn't put anything out. Yeah, it says Showtime's coming here soon. So this came out like this week, though. Like,
yes,
yeah. So, and they said they're gonna bring it out when again?
October 22nd. The end of October. So it's gonna be two Fridays from now.
Okay. So, oh yeah, that's Halloween weekend. Okay.
So we may or may not be here.
Yeah.
we may be watching Suzume again.
Well, who knows? I mean, like, again, like, the list of theaters is not out yet. I really hope it's like somewhere close by, so I can be able to actually watch it again.
I think I know what Ryan's thinking is. I'm only gonna watch this if this is an IMAX.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that would be a good idea. It's like, in a bigger theater where it could be like a better experience to say.
Now, I don't know if they should, because I remember when we talked about Suzume, we talked about the fact that over at Delta Shores, they have an IMAX, but it's kind of like a standard IMAX. Now, I wonder if they're going to do the IMAX Sacramento.
I wonder what IMAX theater would mostly have it here.
It's officially called the Esquire IMAX Theater. It's I forget the size, because I remember back when Oppenheimer came out, it's like one of the few theaters in the entire world where it's like it's like the biggest ass screen ever. Yeah, so it's let me go back. Okay, here we go. It was one of the few theaters that was showing Oppenheimer in 70mm. IMAX
70mm. Yeah, IMAX 70mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Sacramento, it was in the headlines because I believe this, the Esquire IMAX theater is a lot bigger than the one in Delta Shores. So I kind of want to know if they might show Suzume at the Esquire, because I would watch that. I watch that in a fucking heartbeat. Because
mm-hmm.
that screen is fucking massive.
I really wanted the same thing here over in the Bay Area. I mean, there are a lot of theaters that have IMAX as an option. I remember the one in Pleasanton, like it's like 30 minutes away from me, that actually had the Oppenheimer 70mm IMAX. So if that actually does pop up in that IMAX screen for Suzume, I'm going to watch it there.
Do any of you guys care about Dragon Ball?
No.
No.
They are doing a remake of GT. I know that much.
That's right.
Like, GT. Oh, wait. So it's not a brand new series. It's a remake.
That's GT 2. That's what I heard.
Yeah. Okay. GT. Yeah, because I heard about this. So because as of recording, they are Comic Con. New York Comic Con is happening, and Crunchyroll just showed off Dragon Ball Daima. And for what it felt like, it's like a brand new Dragon Ball series. But no, you're telling me it's a GT remake?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, god damn it. Really?
I'm reading an article from CBR. It says, Dragon Ball, top of this game, New York Comic Con announced Dragon Ball Daima, an upcoming anime spinoff that will give fans plenty of new Dragon Ball adventures.
Oh, okay. So it's not necessarily like a brand new Dragon Ball storyline. It's a fucking remake.
I think. Oh. I need to read more about this, but it looks like many side stories.
Think of it like Kai, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of many side stories. So it's not really like part of the series, but it's more like if you like Dragon Ball GT, here's the characters that are in Dragon Ball GT and just new adventures with them. Dragon Ball won't replace Dragon Ball Super. Okay, what is this here? So it's a playful spin-off. Oh, it's a spin-off. They're meant to celebrate the franchise rather than set the path for the future. So it's not really like a new series. It's more towards like, hey, it's small adventures with the Dragon Ball folks.
So kind of like more like side stories-ish in a way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know people were excited for it just because Dragon Ball and the franchise is very popular.
Yeah. It's you go to Mexico and you'll see like murals of Goku on the side of buildings.
Yeah. Also, just a heads up, New York Comic Con is like this weekend. I'm assuming there are going to be brand new news while we're away.
They already did a whole bunch. Crunchyroll did announce a whole bunch of new titles coming through. The new Spice Up is coming in. The Seventh Time Loot, the villainess enjoys a carefree life married to a worst enemy. My next life as a villainess, all roots lead to doom, the movie. Sengoku Yoko. I mentioned Spice and Wolf. The Foolish Angel Dances with the Devil. The Undead Unwashed Adventurer.
This is going to be for next season, right? The winter season?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, a lot of them are saying 2024. Let's see. 2024. Coming soon. The Sengoku Yoko is January, so probably next season. The villainous movie is 2BA. Seventh Time Loop is 2024. So, yeah, that just got announced at New York Comic Con. And then also, Kaiju number 8 is coming out in April.
All right.
Yay, more Crunchyroll anime that you can only watch on Crunchyroll. Speaking of Crunchyroll, if you want to watch free Crunchyroll, now they have a 24/7 anime channel.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that, too. Wait, it's supposed to be mixed with sub and dub, according to what I heard.
It says just dubbed, according to the Crunchyroll press, yes.
Okay, so something tells me this is pretty much like the flashback to Neon Alley. Everybody remember that title.
It is a little bit. Kind of Neon Alley, the anime network. Now,
anime network,
You're not going to find this on DirecTV Channel 482 or your Xfinity. This is going to be on Amazon Freeverse, the LG channels, the Roku channel, and then Vizio Watch Free Plus. And you can watch some anime series like Cordy Mia, Mordor the Patriot, Ranking of Kings, Psycho Pass, Offeretta, Sugar Apple Fairy Tale, To Your Eternity, and Code Geass. Yes, you get to watch Code Geass all over again.
Yeah. It launched today. Wait, it launched today, so you can actually watch that right now. Huh.
Meanwhile, so, Samsung doesn't get any apps or Crunchyroll.
Fuck. That has to be only on Roku Channel, Vizio. Oh, that sucks.
Or Amazon. I have Amazon.
Freebie. Oh yeah, we can do that too. Amazon or Freebie.
Now, I find it as ironic. The channel's a collaboration between Crunchyroll and GSN. Do you know what GSN is?
Game Show Network.
Yes.
What? Wait. So that means that we can actually watch game shows on Crunchyroll channel.
Code Geass.
That doesn't make any fucking sense.
They can see that. I mean, yeah. It'd be funny if we see that happen in the Crunchyroll.
Oh yeah. So like you're watching fucking Code Geass episode 1, Code Geass episode 2, right afterwards, Pressure Luck.
Wants to be a millionaire or deal or no deal. Or deal or no deal.
There's only that one guy that won it over and over again. Stop.
So, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, why, you know, this is another reason why I should hate Crunchyroll. Now they're putting out a free channel. It's like, look, it's called marketing. It's you're putting, and it's not like they're gonna put, oh, we're all of a sudden we're gonna put Attack on Titan the final season part 1, part 2, part 3, part 1. The final.
I mean, if anything is experimental, and at the moment, like they're only putting out a small amount of like Crunchyroll titles out. I mean, it is English dub. It's only a small amount of Crunchyroll titles that's just out. But then wait until later, where if it gets a little bit successful, then they could actually bring out the big hitters like Demon Slayer, Jujutsu Kaisen.
The problem is that I don't think they will, because that they're gonna
they'll lure them into Crunchyroll. Is that reason
they're
why
they're gonna lure them to Crunchyroll?
So what I would do is that I would actually bring up some of the old titles like Funimation that Funimation had, and now it's on Crunchyroll.
That's what they're doing.
Well, I mean, you could also bring in like big titles like Soul Eater, Black Butler.
So what they're gonna do
Neverland.
What they'll do is they'll show ads. You watch Geass, and all of a sudden, hey, here's the trailer for the upcoming season of Jujutsu Kaisen.
I know that each channel they're gonna I know that in the channel they're gonna probably put advertisements saying like, "You want more anime? Go to Crunchyroll.com and get a premium subscription for Sony $7.99, or starting at $7.99."
Yeah.
That's gonna be like the first ad you see too.
Yeah. And then they'll also talk about like, this anime airing at this time or whatever. I mean, it's trying to be like one of those like, it's trying to be like, for example, like what Amazon is doing for Thursday Night Football, you know, something like that.
Not necessarily. You still have to pay for Amazon Prime.
I mean, you still, like I said, you still have to pay for Amazon Prime, but at the same time, it's okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't think you have to be a subscriber to Prime to get the channel.
Mm-hmm. But the way I'm kind of seeing like how, I mean, it's not like where you have to pay for watching Thursday Night Football. It's more towards like how they're trying to at least showcase anime along with their advertisements. So like you'll have advertisements talking about these shows that'll be on the channel, but there's also gonna be shows on Crunchyroll where you have to get a premium subscription and pay $7.99 a month in order for you to actually watch it. So I'm assuming Spy Family ads, Quintuplets ads, Love Live ads, you know, Attack on Titan ads. Yeah, they're probably gonna put that out there over the channel while waiting for like the, it's your commercial break. So it's like you're watching the show, commercial break is just pretty much showing up.
Commercial break for Attack on Titan, the final season, part 1, part 2, part 3, part 1.
Yes.
The final part 1, part 2. Actually, this is actual final episode, part 1.
I've lost track of how the finals are for it, but it's... It's still good. Okay.
It's still good. So if we cancel the Crunchyroll network and Dragon Ball and we leave it at Suzume's Come Back to Theaters, we actually have good news.
There you go.
Actually, no. Not really. I mean, the way Nate was going. But here's some better news. Crunchyroll's getting sued, and we can all get at least our $13.
That's right. Did you ever get the email?
No, I didn't get an email.
You can file a claim online as long as you print out the as long as you email or print an email print and mail the actual form over.
Well, were you here's the thing. Were you a Crunchyroll subscriber during that timeline that they were saying that they were taking information and stuff like
2021? Yeah, me and Matt were.
So you would probably get an email about that, right?
You don't have to get the email, even if you are a subscriber from then until now.
Hmm.
You can do the form online and email it, or you can print out the form and actually mail it to said law firm, and you're in. You're in. As long as you mail it before December, I think it was the 12th, you're in.
Then that's, I guess that's how the case is going to be.
So I'll be getting my $13 worth.
Yeah, you get $13 and the law firm gets millions. Woohoo.
Woohoo. Yeah.
Mind you, the $13 is just an estimate. But
it could be more. It could be more. It could be less.
It could be less.
Oh,
okay. So if we take that news out and the fact we leave it at Susan May's come back to theaters, it's actually good news. So
that's good news. Yeah.
Shut the fuck up. The podcast is over.
What are you talking about?
Wait.
We're getting money.
Yeah, 13 bucks, but that, it's bad. Okay, it's bad news because Crunchyroll, you know, they're the few that got caught with selling information when they're not supposed to. Yes, everyone's doing it, you know, but, you know, Crunchyroll got caught, but they're trying to say, oh, this is the reason why Crunchyroll needs to stop being a monopoly. This has nothing to do with a monopoly. This is to try to get away with shit, like all the other fucking tech companies, selling information and hoping that they don't get caught. But it's bad news because, yes, it's good news because, yes, you're getting money, but it's bad news because it's another facade of tech where it's like everyone's trying to sell you fucking information. So in essence, it's an even storyline. You get rid of that. You get rid of the channel news. You get rid of Dragon Ball and you leave it at Suzume is back in theaters. We have good news.
Wait, Ryan. Okay, Ryan wants to tell something good. So Nate works at Meta. Oh wait.
And on that note, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Killing Call Blockcast.
Hey! If anything, there's some good news there. I get paid well.
If you like what you heard, you can follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. We're probably being data mined anyway, so you can probably find us on X. You can find us on whatever.
Time for me to find your Facebook.
You already have my fucking Facebook. Yeah, I have a blog Facebook.
I'm going to get banned from a friend of mine. Great. He knows the Zuck.
Oh, shit.
Don't mess with him now.
Let's get the fuck out of here before Zuckerberg finds our asses. So the to close this out tonight, I have another Joji song. It's the one that Ryan has stuck in his head.
I mean, I have one last good thing to tell. At least, at the very least. The pandemonium tour for Joji and like his shot in LA was hella hype. That was something good. That was worth every experience I could ever pay the money for. And that was some good news. And now, as Matt implemented, here's Pretty Boy featuring Lil Yachty. Take it away, Joji.
I'm a pretty boy living on the west side. Living so loud, you could never hear me cry. Finest, dirty boy living on the west side, living so loud.